How are you doing this afternoon?
Hanging in there, Chris.
I think today we're going to talk about dyno calibration. But before we get into that, I suppose we need to talk a little bit about how we measure torque, how the dyno operates to measure torque, and therefore place of calibration within that.
Calibration is a pretty big topic, and like you said, we'll focus on the dyno aspect of calibration. From a standpoint of that, we're talking about torque.
Yeah.
And the best way to explain torque is talking about an automobile or an engine in an automobile, which it produces a turning force, and that force is restricted by what it has to move, which is the car. So the car is actually restricting the twisting force of the engine as it's being transmitted through the transmission and to the rear wheels to the vehicle. So it's this twisting force is the best way to describe torque.
Yeah, that translates to the wheels to drive the vehicle, yeah.
Right. It's a rotational twisting force.
Okay.
Torque.
So we come to a dyno. That twisting force is restrained by the dyno. The dyno then moves, and in moving, we can measure the torque that's produced. And just to clarify that, moving isn't the dyno rotating. The dyno moves a little, and in that little movement, we can measure how much torque it's resisting.
Right. Each dyno, there are different types of dynos with different ways of measuring torque.
Yes.
Okay?
Yeah.
And just to cover it on a high level, you have dynos that are, and we'll refer to the water brake dynamometers, but it applies to others as well. You have these dynamometers that are mounted on trunnions that float on the trunnions or trunnion bearings. So they're able to move independent of the base or float, as they say. And the way we measure torque with these dynamometers is we have a load cell device that's connected to the dynamometer that moves versus and fixed to the base that it's mounted on. So any movement is measured by that load cell. And that is one way. And there are two different types of measuring torque. That is one way. The other way is an inline device that goes in the drive line. So the best way to explain it was it's something that would go after the transmission in an automobile to the drive shaft to the rear wheels. You'd insert it in line and you'd measure that
right.
Fork.
In principle, could it be mounted on the prop shaft of a car and measure the torque going to the back axle?
Exactly. Exactly.
If somebody wanted to get that carried away with it, they could measure it that way.
Right.
And that could either be something in line or mounted on the front of a dyno.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. And to elaborate a little bit on that, when you talk about inline torque measurement, there are several different devices. There's many brands of inline torque measurement equipment. So it will vary a little bit, but it's the principles the same as you talked about it as well, Chris. So that's one way. The other is the not inline, which is the load cell or the, you know, looks like a hockey puck in some situations that measures the force placed upon it by the dyno itself.
The last one, an unusual one, a little not very often used except on some very large machines, is actually measuring the movement of the whole dyno. So the dyno is mounted rigidly, and we're looking at measuring the force that the dyno exerts on the floor as it tries to rotate.
Exactly.
And sort of load cells in the ground can measure that one. But that's something typically used on the very large machines.
The load cells? The not inline load cells?
Where it's a rigid base mounted on the ground. I've seen it used on the LS dynos for ship engines, but not on smaller dynos.
Oh, it's used on smaller dynos.
Okay.
The configuration is a little bit differently. So when I explained a puck style, they have S beam shaped ones, but they're basically strain gauges.
Okay.
Strain gauges calibrated to measure force in a certain direction, whether it be tension, compression, or otherwise.
Right. So we've got sort of four ways of measuring torque.
Yeah.
And each of those has its own qualities. Sometimes we use the inline torque meters for measuring the torque with high-speed machines. Usually, perhaps the load cells we're using more for the medium-speed machines.
And we don't need to go into it too much, but there are differences, obviously, between the inline and not inline torque measurement equipment. You know, outside of the cost, the reactive forces that you're measuring directly from the engine versus through mechanical components to a load cell, there's a difference in the reactionary forces, but they're all purposes to measure torque.
Yeah. Okay, so having defined that, and we've got a method of doing that, we've got to work out how accurately we're measuring the torque. We've got to work out if we need to calibrate any measurements within the system to make sure that they are measuring the way it was first built and make sure it's measuring accurately, which comes down to the whole calibration process.
Right. When we talk about calibration of the load cell or the torque meter or the torque measurement device, I guess for our conversation today is the torque measurement device. You know, we're looking for the same thing you calibrate anything else for. We're looking for the accuracy of the reading when we're measuring it, and we're looking for repeatability. Those are the two things we're targeting to make sure our data quality is where it needs to be, whether it be a load cell or a thermocouple measuring a temperature in an exhaust system. You want to ensure the accuracy and that the data is repeatable over and over again under the same situation. So there's pieces that go into play into making sure you set up properly to calibrate. Is that the direction we're going in?
I think so, yeah, because we'll look at the load cell, and there's the two elements of that. One is the lever for the method using the lever arm. We've got to make sure the lever arm is the right length, but that once it's made and measured, that's not really changing. I guess the load cell is the one which requires the calibration and potentially some resetting.
Right. Well, if you take the load cell itself, whether it be a torque meter load cell or otherwise, it should come with a cal certificate. And this calibration certificate should tell you what the millivolts versus force being applied equate to. So yeah, at X millivolts, it reads X pounds of force. And you use that data to help set up and calibrate the system that you're using this load cell on.
Right. And setting that up for a lever arm system, looking at one of the dynos, that would be a case of loading the weight on the arm to a certain level and making sure that the reading reflects what was on the calibration certificate in the first place.
Right.
So that's right. Probably the most straightforward to do.
Mm-hmm.
I guess measuring an inline torque device is a little bit more complicated.
The principle behind both of them are fairly straightforward. It's critical that you set it up correctly to calibrate. And we can't go through every single load cell calibration, but basically you want to make sure that if you're calibrating a load cell on a dynamometer and you have the lever arm that you spoke of, you want to make sure the mechanical components are all in check, meaning that there's no issues with that. And when I say that, I refer to a common term that you get into sometimes with this type of calibration with a floated trunnion is stiction, which means that as you try to calibrate it, you go up and you add weight to it and you correspond that weight of what it should be. And you bring it, you start at zero and you work your way up to how many ever pounds of force you put on it. Then you bring it back down to it and you hope that along the way and back down again, there's no change in reading, and then it comes back to zero. And what you're going to see over time if you do enough calibrations with dynos is you will incur stiction with this type of dyno, with a floated trunnion dyno.
So the stiction on a floating dyno, it's not moving very much at all. It's a bearing
right.
surface, but that requires some maintenance to make sure that moving face is correctly lubricated so that there is minimal stiction.
Right. Well, and what you'll have is you'll have things that influence that. And when I say that, I mean you've got water that feeds dynos, whether it be eddy current, whether it be water breaks, or even AC for cooling purposes. But you have things that have hoses that run to that carcass. If it doesn't have enough give in it, it'll influence that the stiction. It'll influence that zero value or the erratic values you may see if you have restrictions from that dyno being not allowed to float freely.
Sometimes inadvertently. So you've got to look at the pipe, as you mentioned, the hose runs.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, flexible hoses are used to connect these machines.
Right.
We've got to make sure that they're not touching anywhere that might cause some added load onto the side of the machine or restriction in the movement. So that's a good point to make sure those are clear.
Yeah, and typically these are not hard, fast rules, but in the past, you know, simple things like you disconnect the load cell and now there's nothing connected to this floating carcass of the dynamometer on the trunnions. So you just lift up on the lever arm with your hand, let go again, make sure you can move it back and forth and you're not feeling any restriction is one good way of easily telling before you get involved with the calibration, a simple check like that.
That's a good point, because I think sometimes we just assume that we'll just load up the arm and measure the load cell and do this quickly. If you don't take care of the things you mentioned, Mike, we're going to finish up with an inaccurate result because of the perhaps the load of a hose dragging on the side of the machine or some other weight that we hadn't accounted for.
Yeah. Yep. Exactly.
That's a good point. So if you do the calibration on an inline torque device, is that going to be less susceptible to external forces?
That's a good question. I think it'll still have the external forces, but not like you would think. There would be less involved from a stiction perspective. It depends on the dynamometer it's used. Okay. So if you're using it on a floated trunnion dynamometer, it'll differ than something that's not floated, so a fixed mount. So if you have a fixed mount dyno where it's not floating on trunnion bearings, then you're going to have an inline torque meter device because a load cell will not work because it's not floated. It doesn't have that reactionary force capability in such as we explained earlier. So there'll be less of it worrying about stiction because now you're locking the rotor, the shaft of the dyno with the torque meter to truly measure the torque being placed upon it. So you can apply weights to the torque flange as well.
So the same principle of applying some static torque to the drive shaft.
Correct.
That's then applied to the torque device and then measuring relative to the calibration certificate for that
yes.
device.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's still affected by the same constraints. We've got to take care to ensure the operation of the machine is unencumbered and there's no external forces acting that way that might change something.
Well put. Very well put.
Okay. So in terms of calibration, assuming that we've measured it, everything's clear, and we've referred it back to the certificate when it was produced, we then got to look at how often we need to do this, because we're not necessarily going to calibrate every time we run, unless there's some very special test, I would presume.
There are. Part of it is preference. So the manufacturer will recommend a certain interval for calibration, okay?
Yeah.
But dependent upon the type of test you're running, it may require you to adjust that frequency of calibration. If you look at EPA, Environmental Protection Agency for the United States, they are involved with dictating the calibration or the accuracy required in your measurements or the calibration that you may have to calibrate on a more frequent basis because you are basically certifying the test results that you get from your data to the government saying it meets these emission specifications. When I say emission specifications, we are submitting data in regards to the tailpipe emissions, amongst other things. But if the torque isn't reading correctly, it directly impacts the output of what the emission values represent.
So to complete that test, we have to run very specific load points. And to get those load points right, we have to be calibrated very carefully to make sure that when we say it's a certain number of foot-pounds of torque, it is exactly that.
Right. And it's not unusual in some circumstances to calibrate through a series of tests. So if you have a series of EPA testing you're doing, you will probably calibrate just before you do it, and you may calibrate in between each test.
So in that case, you're going to get very familiar with how to carry out the calibration process.
Right, because the problem becomes if you do that and your calibration changes, you have to start again. It's very expensive, and you definitely want to make sure that you understand that when you do this type of testing, you are going to be calibrating more frequently.
Well, that's a pretty, it's a regular test completed by a number of the auto manufacturers. I would have expected that the calibration frequency is not so high on most testing.
No, and again.
Or perhaps a weekly event or less than that?
Every 6 months, possibly.
Depending on the test schedule, I suppose. Yeah.
It just depends. And it depends because if you have your own quality system internally, you determine sometimes the frequency based upon your requirements, based upon what you're doing. So the manufacturer may say you got to calibrate every 6 months, but you may determine you want to do it every 3 months, or you may want to extend it out 8 months. If you can prove to yourself that the data doesn't change within
then
that time
confidence
frame.
Confidence will increase.
Yeah, and you have data to prove that you can extend out your intervals of calibration, then go for it.
Okay, so establish that frequency. Do I need to send out for a special team to calibrate? Can this be done by the usual engine testing technicians? Does it require some special skills?
I would say if you have the equipment, and typically when you buy a new dyno or a used dyno, you're going to buy calibration equipment for it, meaning depending upon the type of dyno, a calibration arm, weights, et cetera, weight pan. So most of the circumstances, you can do it yourself. The owner of the product can do it themselves. Doesn't mean you can't hire somebody to come in and certify it. or calibrate it. But most of the time, it is something that once you've gone through the process once or twice, it's fairly simple to do.
So maybe it requires somebody to come in. If some readings don't come out as you expect, perhaps something needs adjusting. I mean, a load cell would be sent off to be recalibrated, I suppose. Mm-hmm. But if the lever arm had moved, then that might require some resetting. So some unusual circumstances might require some more special attention.
In most circumstances, if you run into a problem, one of the problem resolution paths may be, let's calibrate the dyno to make sure nothing changed with the dyno because we're getting erroneous results or we're getting results we didn't expect from the engine. So you may say, okay, let's calibrate it. That's why I say you really should be able to do this in-house, because sometimes you don't know when you're going to have to calibrate, and test cell time is extremely expensive to be down waiting for somebody to come service it unless you have a serviceable contract, whereas they come on certain intervals. That's why I say it's probably most efficient to be able to do it yourself.
Right, because although we talked about a frequency, a particular time, it sounds like we've got to keep really well aware of the results and the expectations and see if there is any unusual results that might require us to do a calibration.
Correct.
Okay. All right. Well, thanks so much. That's very interesting to understand more about that whole process.
Yeah, that was good. Thanks, Chris. Yep. Great.
Thank you for listening to Dyno Insights presented by Froude. If there are any engine testing topics you'd like us to discuss, we'd love to hear from you. Please email us at podcast@frewdyno.com.